Hakeem drew the suet blade across the smooth river stone. The girl's name was Angela. She sat at a table in Madame Sonia's kitchen, fast asleep beside a half-empty bowl of apple slices and clotted cream. Cleaned up and wearing a fresh smock, she looked a damn sight better than the waif they had found outside his ruined apartment building. When the edge shimmered like foxfire over the moors on a cool summer evening, Cain put his knife away. Madame Sonia crossed the kitchen in her nightgown to hand him a cup of warm tea.
Sure, she's welcome to stay here, Cain. It's no bother. I've had a gaggle of little ones running through this house before. And our business being what it is, I gather I'll see more before they put me in the ground. What is if I can stay in business?
Getting bad?
As bad as I've ever seen. Panopus came back today with news. Seems some citizens tried to stop a band of flagellants from burning down a tavern on Rye Street. Just everyday folk, but they had the betters hemmed in tight until the Brotherhood arrived. 14 dead or told. The bells on Septon's Chapel have been ringing all afternoon, and now there's talk that the holy prelate has died, God rest his soul. We've gotten more people at the door looking for a safe place to hide than actual customers these past few days. But things will look up.
Cain reached into his tunic and took out a leather purse. It was the last of his money. The rest had been hidden in the floors and walls of his apartment.
This is for taking in the girl. See that she gets some learning. And I don't want her working a room here, Sonia. Not ever. I'll have your word on that, or I'll take her somewhere else.
I promise. She can fetch and cook until she's old enough for schooling. I know just the right teacher. He's retired from the university. A real scholar and a gentleman. Nah, she'll be fine as a spring rain. But what about you two? Need to borrow Kira's room for a while longer?
Cain looked over at Josie, sitting across from Angela, with her head nestled in her arms. She looked almost like a child herself, despite the blood and soot marring her borrowed clothes.
No, it isn't safe here for us or you. We'll be moving on.
By the way you speak, doesn't sound like you intend to be back.
You never can tell, can you?
Cain went over to Josie and woke her with a gentle nudge.
It's time to go.
Madame Sonia gave them each a hearty embrace before they shuffled out the back door. The deep purple of night's final hour lightened into the faint glow of dawn. Umber streaks etched the sky, forecasting poor weather ahead. Their situation was bleak, to say the least. They couldn't trust anyone now, couldn't go any place Cain normally frequented. Not even his secret bolt holes and dives across the city were safe. He was known throughout the underworld, and his passage would go noticed. Disguises wouldn't hide them forever, not as long as they stayed in the city. So he was taking her to the only place in the world he thought she'd be safe.
Are you sure about this?
No, but it's what your fathers would have wanted. Both of them.
We'll return as soon as it's safe, right?
Sure.
He let it go at that. Would it ever be safe in the city again?
Come on.
The cemetery's dingy walls appeared from the night fog. The stonework was cracked and pitted like old cheese, caked with clumps of moss and climbing vines. Wrought iron spikes, now rusted and bent, lined the top. Once there had been a contingent of watchmen assigned to protect the final resting spot of Othar's citizenry, but it had been deemed a waste of resources.
What are we doing here?
This is our way out. Trust me.
She pulled herself up straight and nodded. Cain opened the corroded gate lock with a quick twist of a knife point.
Damn.
And grimaced as he heard it break. He ushered Josie inside, then shut the gate behind them. There was nothing for the lock. It was busted, well and good. Cain put an arm around Josie's shoulders, partly to comfort her and partly to keep her from stumbling. The atmosphere of the boneyard was pungent with a miasma of noxious vapors. Swirling fingers of fog wafted across the sparse gray grass, through storm grates and the river wall. They didn't dare risk a light, but Cain knew the way. He navigated a winding path through the rows of gravestones. Some were so old their dates couldn't be read. A dozen centuries of corpses lay in repose beneath their feet. Cain stopped Josie at an old mausoleum near the east end of the cemetery. The words carved into the stone lintel above the heavy bronze door were faded and eroded by time, but still legible. Peter Areptos, the last honest man of Othar, from his grateful brothers. Cain smiled at the private joke as he heaved on the door. Flecks of verdigris came away in his hand from the handle, but the door opened quietly. Its hinges were kept well-oiled by the deceased's large family of so-called brothers. Kame drew Josie inside. Her hand was cool and slick in his grip. He squeezed to reassure her. The inside was as dark as the proverbial tomb, but Kame was able to make out a stone ledge with several objects. He found a wedge of flint and struck it against the iron plate resting beside it to produce a spark. The old storm lantern soon flickered to life. The interior of the crypt was cramped by a massive sarcophagus in the center of the floor. Great attention to detail had gone into the bier. Upon the lid was carved the likeness of a man in white marble. He was of middling years, dressed in plain but well-cut clothes. Kame gestured with a lantern.
Josie, meet Brother Peter.
I take it he wasn't really your brother.
In a manner of speaking.
There had never been a man named Peter Oreptos living in Othar, or anywhere else to Kame's knowledge. About 50 years ago, some elements of the city's underworld sought a reliable and secret means to enter the city. Gate sentries could be bribed, of course, but human agents were vulnerable to sudden attacks of conscience. So the various thieves, con artists, sellswords, and other scum pooled their resources to have a fictional brother interred in the cemetery. Workers were smuggled inside the crypt night after night for many long months to work on the clandestine project. Kame reached out with his free hand to toy with the decorative shapes carved into the side of the sarcophagus. He found the one and pushed.
Oh!
The lid of the stone coffin slid away. Kame caught Josie's hand and drew her closer to the sepulcher. Instead of holding the moldy remains of a corpse, the interior was hollow. Steps disappeared down into the darkness of a long tunnel. A cloying smell rose from the aperture, not fetid and charnel, but the smell of clean, moist earth.
Come.
He held the lantern before them as they went down into the darkness.
No, no, no! Prophet's blood!
Archpriest Vasily swept the mass of architectural plans from his desk. He dropped into his throne-like chair behind the desk. He had been at the site of the new cathedral, basking in the realization of his genius wrought in marble, when the news of Benevolence's death reached him. His first thought had been to curse the heavens for their poor timing. Later, he shook with rage as he read the first reports out of Devecchi. The prelate had been murdered. The deed had Levictus's name written all over it. Did the man think he was a fool? What with a rogue assassin on the loose killing electors, men that Vasily had counted upon in his bid for the prelacy, it was too soon to precipitate the final phase of their plan.
This could ruin everything!
He paused with his hand over an Illminish porcelain figurine. Perhaps things were not as bad as they appeared. The deaths on the council were a setback, but no one else had enough votes to swing the election. That meant he was still in a position of strength. If he moved swiftly and with purpose, his plan could still succeed. But first he needed to rein in that bastard Levictus. The second thing he'd done upon returning to the palace had been to summon the sorcerer. It was time to remind the man which of them was the servant and which the master. The lamp over his desk fluttered as if in a stiff breeze. The windows were closed. Vasily stepped back reflexively as the slim figure appeared behind him.
God's blood, man, what are you doing here?
While Vasily took a moment to catch his breath, the assassin took a seat by the fireplace. The archpriest's fingers curled into fists, but he controlled his tone.
Have you found them yet? I need that girl. And the man... what's his name?
Raoul produced a knife and twirled it between his fingers.
We're still searching for them. You know, you really shouldn't leave such hazardous tools lying about where anyone could snatch them up.
Vasily frowned. This was a different row than the one he was accustomed to dealing with. Vasily went behind his desk and sat down. He considered calling for his guards, but held off.
What are you getting at?
You've been colluding with dangerous people, Your Luminance. All those rumors about war in the north must be driving you mad.
I don't know what...
Don't waste your breath.
Raoul reached into his jacket and dropped a scroll on the desk. Vasily stiffened as he saw the wax seal on the parchment. How could this be? All his most secret documents were kept under lock and key. Then he knew. Levictus. Vasily brushed a hand down the front of his robe.
Yes. I have had dealings with certain entities in Aragoth. What of it? We are surrounded by foreign powers that work toward our annihilation. From the pagans of Arnos to the godless heathens of the Western realms. The prelate understood the use of clandestine means to further the church's mission. The use of assassination as a political lever, for example.
Dealing with the shadow is sacrilege and treason to boot.
Don't prattle to me about sacrilege and treason! I have spent my life in service to the church. After Immaculate passed, I should have been elected to the high office. Me! Not that doted benevolence. Your failure may have altered the timing of my plans, but nonetheless, I will be the next prelate.
Ralph frowned as if perplexed, as he examined the palms of his hands.
I'm afraid there's been a change of plans. You see, it's not Kame who's been killing your peers on the council.
I'll have you whipped through the streets for your insolence!
Vasily gazed down at the knife's shiny handle, protruding from his chest. It was a curious sensation, more pressure than pain, radiating out from his breastbone. A thin line of warmth trickled under his robe, down his belly, and into his small clothes. Another figure appeared before his desk.
Levictus.
Nothingness reflected in the opaque depths of the sorcerer's eyes. Vasily wanted to reach for his sacred medallion to cow the man in his tracks, but his hands refused to obey. His body was too heavy. He couldn't move. He looked to Raoul, who had risen to stand beside Levictus.
You don't know. You think you've won. But you don't.
The room spun. And then he was lying on the floor, staring up at the ceiling. Little shadows crawled across the covered surface, so many of them, like a hive of formless black termites burrowing through the palace. Something tugged at his sleeve. Raoul was going through his desk. Clever boy. He found the secret compartment under the lowest drawer that held the secrets he had killed to protect. Now they were laid bare, like his body would soon be, dressed in a white funeral shroud and placed in his stone tomb. He hoped his son would honor his wishes and give him a mahogany coffin. He'd always loved the luster of that dark wood. The sorcerer leaned over him. An object came down beside Vasily's head, a pale wooden box. It resembled an offering box. When he was a boy, his father had allowed him to place their family's alms into the box. The young parish priest had had such fervent, penetrating eyes, always watching him. The pain was fading. It wasn't so bad dying. He would close his eyes and drift into a deep, endless slumber. Levictus bent lower. A crumpled piece of parchment was placed on the archpriest's chest. Like an evil eye, the indentation of the Vasily family seal stared at him from the bottom of the document.
Benevolence spilled his last secret as he died, old man. I know who ordered the arrest of my family.
Vasily's final kiss came not from the lips of his mistress, but from the bitter bite of shadow-tainted steel. After their escape through the underground tunnel leading from Peter's tomb, Kame and Josephine had emerged in the Thalberg of ramshackle homes along the western banks of the Memnor River. Kame liberated a pair of steeds and gear from a tavern stable, and they set off. There was only one place in the world where Josie would be safe until he settled their problems. Only one person he trusted to protect her. They rode west past sleepy villages and isolated homesteads. As the miles wore on, the farms and vineyards fell behind, and they entered into a vast tract of wilderness. Kame kept one eye over his shoulder. Even though they hadn't seen a living soul in hours, he couldn't shake the feeling they were being pursued. Invisible phantoms prickled his imagination, and not all of them originated from the events in Othar. With each passing mile, he slipped deeper and deeper into his past. Josie stirred and stretched on her piebald horse. Kame watched her without embarrassment. The last few days had taken their toll. She was thinner than when they'd met. Her face had lost some of its color. Still, There was a core of iron in her that could not be denied.
What are you looking at?
Maybe we should talk about it.
Talk about what?
About what happened in your father's house when you kissed...
I was overwrought. And you had one foot in the grave. It was just a moment of weakness.
Weakness, huh?
She fixed her gaze on the road.
It won't happen again.
That's good to know.
Kane shifted in the saddle. He wasn't used to riding anymore. His thighs would be sore tonight.
So, where are we?
Dunmarrow.
I've never been so far outside the city walls. Do people actually live out here?
Few. At least, not many you'd want to meet. We're getting into bandit territory.
This person you're taking us to, he can help us? Who is he? Your teacher?
Not exactly. But I trust him, and I don't trust many people. Neither should you.
All right. So where does he live? On the other side of this wood?
The path entered a stand of red maples. Cool shadows played across the ground. These woods were no mystery to Kame. He had explored their length and breadth extensively as a boy. They had been his refuge, his castle, his haven from a host of memories that refused to fade. But he had never considered returning until now. Half a mile after they passed under the leaf canopy, a humble dwelling appeared beside the road. Not much had changed since the last time he'd seen the place. A tendril of wood smoke rose from the clay brick chimney. Roughed logs formed the walls, insulated with thick layers of wattle. The roof was bundled thatch.
Is this it? How long since you've been here?
A long time.
A heavy-set man came around the corner of the cottage. He had a wood axe with a black iron blade in one ham-fisted hand and a load of firewood tucked under the other arm. He looked to be somewhere in his 50s. His broad frame was clad in a homespun tunic tied with a rope over buckskin breeches. His face was uneven from an old war wound that had smashed in the left side of his jaw, giving him a menacing appearance, like a mangled wolf that had been in too many fights. Kane leaned forward in the saddle. The old man had changed. His beard, as scraggly as always, had grown down to his chest, and he'd lost some hair on top. Extra weight now clung to his middle, but his shoulders were still massive, rolling on either side of his head like tumbling boulders. Kane supposed he had changed somewhat himself. He'd been little more than a half-grown boy when he left. Would the old man even recognize him? Lou's fears evaporated with a nod.
Kane.
Kane returned the nod.
Cass, looks like your taste in company has improved. You two jumped a broom yet? No. Cass, this is Josie, just a girl I know.
The old man started toward the door.
Well, come inside. I've got a pot of char on the fire. It should be about ready.
Kane climbed down and moved to help Josie from her horse, but she beat him to the ground.
So, I'm not good enough for you.
Kane headed toward the cabin. Kane ran his hand across the surface of the table in the larger of the cabin's two rooms. The whorls and knots in the wood brought back memories. He and Cass had spent a lot of time at this table conversing over meals of home-ground sausage, garnished with whatever they could coax from the garden. Well, Cass had mostly talked while he listened. Kane remembered less pleasant things, too. Angry words and all-out battles. The bitter winter when everything in the cabin except themselves had frozen solid. The interior was just the way he remembered it, except smaller. A layer of dust covered everything. Cobwebs hung from the rafters and the old spear over the fireplace, and the window shades looked like they hadn't been cleaned since the cabin was built. The old man hadn't said much since they arrived, just dropped his firewood by the hearth and puttered around the squat iron stove. Josie sat back in the homemade chair and studied the two of them, like animals in a menagerie. Kane shifted to alleviate the stitch in his side. Maybe this wasn't the best idea. He was trying to come up with an excuse to leave when Cass came over with a steaming kettle, a rag wrapped around the handle. He poured a cup for each of them and lowered himself onto a stool made from a tree stump.
Would you like the chair? I can sit on the stool.
No, I'm fine. I made those chairs, you know. Hope you don't get a splinter.
The cha was just like in the old days. Horrible. But it was hot.
So, are you and Kane related?
Cass glanced across the table with raised eyebrows. Kame shrugged. They were past the point where his secrets could do him much more harm.
Not exactly. I served his father for a time after my soldiering days. After his father and mother were killed...
She wasn't killed.
Kame squeezed the cup tight.
She was taken.
All right.
Josie looked at Kame.
Your father was killed and someone took your mother? How old were you?
8.
Josie reached out as if to touch his arm, but stopped before her fingers made contact.
I'm so sorry, Kame.
Ancient history.
Who did it?
We never found out. Kame ran off during the attack. I searched for weeks before I found him, scrounging around the streets of Leovard, skinny as an alley cat and almost as feral. I brought him out here, and we built this cottage.
Kame could guess the thoughts running through Josie's head, trying to piece together the shambles of his life, to trace the journey from that small, forlorn boy to what he'd become. He could have told her not to bother, that he had chosen his path with his eyes open wide, but it didn't matter what she thought. Nothing could change the past, so the past didn't matter.
We had some good times here. That is, until he up and ran out on me. You were what, Kame? 15?
13.
They had argued over something. He couldn't remember what, but it had seemed like the most important thing in the world at the time.
We had a fight. I can't even recall what it was about. Anyways, Kame turned in early that night. The next morning, he was gone. You know, I went back to Leovard searching for you.
No one asked you to.
Damn it, boy! I thought you were long dead by now.
Well, I'm not.
The room was cramped and stifling, the air thick with regrets.
I know I made mistakes. I couldn't replace your family. But gods know I tried.
Save it.
Kame went around back to the wide meadow, lined by a bulwark of ancient boles. This had been his playground, the place he went to escape with his thoughts. Years had passed, but the sights and smells of the cabin brought it all back like he was still just a boy, wrestling with the same problems, asking the same questions, and still finding no answers. What had really happened all those years ago on that cool spring night? Was he truly alone in the world?
I come out here a lot, in the evening, with my pipe. It's relaxing.
Where do you find tobacco this far out?
A trader comes by every few months. I got a new ads last spring.
Kame's gaze wandered to a boulder at the edge of the woods. Almost as high as his waist, half sunk into the earth and covered in gray lichen, it had to weigh as much as a prize steer, if not more. He remembered watching Cass lift the boulder and toss something underneath before dropping the stone back into place. It had happened so long ago, and yet the memory was as sharp as a knife.
You're thinking about your parents.
Kame nodded.
You think you're strong enough to lift that stone yet?
Kame considered the boulder and the mountain of history heaped upon its craggy face.
Don't know if I'll ever be strong enough.
I think about your father a lot. Your mother too. I wonder if I should have searched longer for the ones who did it. Maybe I didn't try hard enough.
Kame scuffed the toe of his boot in the dirt and kicked up a pebble. What could he say? Nothing. He had his own reservations about the past.
But you know, Kame, I'm glad I didn't go back. Because then I'd never have found you. Your father was a great man, the best I ever knew. He would have wanted me to take care of you until you were old enough to look after yourself.
What about what I wanted? What if I'd been willing to trade a few years on the streets in exchange for the knowledge that what happened to my parents had been made right?
You still want revenge? Boy, listen to me. I've seen war and more than enough killing for a lifetime, and I can tell you from experience that's an endless hole. You can pour everything you got into it, but every morning it's still gonna be empty. It doesn't matter how many men you send to their graves. What's past is never going to change. It's time you learned that and moved on.
I still see him in my dreams, Cass. He dies again and again right in front of me. And he keeps asking for justice, but I can't give it to him. What am I supposed to do? Just let it go and forget they ever existed?
Kane, you've been walking a line between light and dark your whole life. Maybe it's time to choose a side and stick with it.
Kane stepped away. A sick feeling uncoiled in his belly. Suddenly, he didn't trust himself. Was he doing the right thing? How could he know?
There are no sides, Cass. Just everyone looking out for themselves. That's the truth my father couldn't face.
You don't see it, boy. You're in trouble.
It's nothing I can't handle. But I need a safe place for Josie to stay. It'll just be for a couple days.
Of course, she's welcome. What about you?
I've got things to take care of.
Came headed back to the cabin. Josie stood in the tiny kitchen area. She looked over as he entered, and it was as if she could read his mind.
I'm not staying without you.
It's for the best.
You don't get to decide where I go and how I live.
He waited. She looked like she was searching for something to throw at him.
We'll have a grand time, lady. We can talk about Kane while he's gone. I'll tell you all his childhood secrets.
Kane! What if you don't come back?
I will.
But what if...
He wrapped his hands around hers.
I will return. Believe that.
She collapsed against him.
You better.
Kane gently pushed Josie away. He gave her his most sincere smile and a wink.
Hope you find what you're looking for, boy.
Kane kept his head down as he stepped over the threshold.
Kane!
He turned in time to catch her. She clutched him hard for a moment and then pushed a small object into his hand. It was cool against his palm.
Take this.
He looked down into his hand. A golden key nestled there amid a jumble of leather string. Her necklace. With a nod, he wrapped the cord around his wrist. Back in the saddle, he filled his lungs with a sense of pine and maple, good earth and sweet smoke. Then he rode away and left behind the two people he cared about the most. Othar's gates were barred when Kane returned, their wardens replaced by soldiers in the hunter green livery of the Nemean army. So he entered by the underground tunnel. If he failed, it was only a matter of time before they got to Josie. The girl was lovely, smart, charming, but she was also haughty and headstrong. She wouldn't be content to wait with Cass for long. And where had Kit gotten off to?
Taking her own sweet time getting over it just when I need her the most.
Kane shook his head as he slipped through the cemetery gate and wondered how he had acquired so many responsibilities. With Matthias dead, there was only one person who knew that he'd be at the Earl's mansion that night. The streets bordering the boneyard were quiet, but only a block away the clamor of fighting resounded. Though muted by the fog from the river, it sounded like a full-scale war. He turned onto Acacia Avenue and found the way blocked by a pair of overturned wagons. Beyond the barrier, soldiers clashed with angry citizens. Bodies clogged the street. The ululation of rage long denied, now suddenly unleashed, filled the humid air. A firebomb landed amid a cluster of soldiers. Orange flames engulfed them. Sparks swirled in the air and were caught by the wind until the bombers were forced to scramble to avoid getting singed by their own handiwork. Kane stayed in the shadows and bypassed the brawl. After several minutes of skulking, he arrived in the merchants' district. The fighting hadn't reached this part of the city yet, but it was only a matter of time. The fires of Lowtown would spread quickly. On Silk Street, the Golden Wheel Gaming House stood between a charash den and a brothel to form a triumvirate of earthly pleasures. The confirmation linking Rao to the plot behind the Earl's assassination stared Kane in the face. A squad of Sacred Brothers slouched on the stoop of the front entrance, like they were paying rent on the place. Kane avoided the street's tall lampposts as he slipped around to the back. A narrow wooden gate gave entrance to an alley behind the gaming house. Dim light reflected in the windows overhead. Three located on the top floor were secured with stout shutters. Those would be Rao's rooms. Kane started his ascent with slow movements, conscious of the wound in his side as he pulled himself up. The amulet dangling from his wrist was an unfamiliar hindrance, but he didn't remove it. He focused on the task one hold at a time until he reached the center window. There, he clung onto the narrow ledge and listened. No sounds issued from inside. He boosted himself higher to peek over the sill. The room on the other side of the rose-colored pane was spacious and well-appointed. Light shined from a tiny lamp above the bed. A large four-poster bed of varnished oak rested in the near corner to his right, a tall wardrobe against the opposite wall, one of its doors partway open. Upon a sideboard next to the wardrobe sat a row of wooden boxes. Boots, capes, shirts, and other articles of clothing were strewn across the floor and draped over furniture. Kane counted 30 heartbeats until his hands and toes began to cramp. Nothing moved inside. He yanked open the shutter and pulled. A jolt of pain seared his side as he heaved himself over the ledge. He fell forward onto a thick-piled carpet. In the scramble to sit upright, his elbow collided with a wooden stand. Just before it hit the floor, he caught a heavy object wrapped in silk. He regarded the item in his hands. A brass icon of St. Jules, patron of the chaste and good-hearted, wrapped in a lady's undergarment. Kane set the statuette back on the stand and stood up. There were two exits, an archway to another room to his left, and a narrow door on the other side of the bed, which was probably a closet. Except for the wooden boxes lined up on the sideboard, there was nothing unusual, so he decided to check the boxes. At the sound, Kane flattened against the wall and drew his suit knives. Rao stepped into the room. Steel glittered between the fingers of his left hand. The arm was whipping back to throw when Kane stepped into the light.
Ah! Kane, I wondered when you might turn up.
Kane adopted a relaxed pose, but his muscles were as tight as iron cables under his clothes. He held his knives by his sides to keep his hands from trembling. He needed answers, not more deaths.
Well, is that Rao? Didn't you expect your pet Tin Men to finish the job?
Rao walked over to the sideboard and set down the stiletto to pour himself a drink from a tall decanter.
Not really. Brandy? It's imported.
Kane didn't reply, but he watched every move.
It wasn't personal. You didn't need to get involved. You should have left the girl to my men.
You're the one who got me involved. You set me up with that job from the start. Thought you'd bag a nobleman and pin it on me.
Well, no harm in a little gamesmanship between friends, eh? I thought you'd make your escape and leave town, hopefully for good. Either way, I get what I want, and you're out of the picture.
Who's behind the murder of Josie's father? Who are you working for?
Rao put a hand on the sideboard.
Josie, is it? I'm disappointed, Kane. I always figured you for a smart guy. I'm done with serving others. I've taken matters into my own hands.
And you killed Matthias because he knew too much.
Actually, that wasn't me. Although, I'll admit, I didn't shed any tears. But it makes no difference. There's no one to stop me now.
There's me.
Don't be an imbecile, Kane. Think of this as an opportunity. Yes, I wanted you out of the way, but now I see a better way. We can work together. We can both be free to live how we want with no one to tell us otherwise.
You think you can buy me off?
Think of the team we would make.
I'd rather think of you lying in your own blood.
Rao set down his glass and faced Kane.
That's not going to happen. Even if you could kill me, you're still a wanted man sought by the entire nation. You've been implicated in the murders of several government officials, including a retired ex-arch and half the Elector Council.
All lies.
Articles of a personal nature were found at the scenes, all of them leading back to you.
You stole those things from my place before you torched it.
You're out of control, Kane. A bloodthirsty animal. The Sacred Brotherhood has orders to kill you on sight.
Then maybe I'll just kill you. One more murder attached to my name wouldn't make any more difference.
I just want the girl.
You'll never set eyes on her. I'll make sure of that.
Kane, did you really think she'd be safe in that little cabin in the woods?
Cass kept a modest home, but he was an enthusiastic host. They dined on wild pig with squash and tomatoes from his garden. Her cup threatened to overflow with homemade wine.
Enough!
Cass's laugh made her think of her father. She brushed melancholy away before it could spoil her mood. She focused on Cass's hands. Large and strong, despite the passage of years, they were covered with thick, ropey veins. A tracery of white scars climbed the thick, hairy planks of his arms. When he smiled, his jaw slid sideways as if it were about to fall off his face. Their eyes met, and Josie glanced down at the tabletop.
I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to stare.
He ran a hand down his cheek, under his bushy chin, and up the other side.
No offense taken. It's been a long time since this ugly mug felt the eyes of a pretty lady.
Josie looked around for something to change the subject, and her gaze wandered to the fireplace.
Why do you have a stick hanging on your wall?
Hmm?
Cass turned to look at the weapon mounted over the hearth. Dust covered its shaft and metal head.
Ah, that, darling, is an old friend of mine.
A friend?
Aye. I was first spear of the Emperor's 4th Legion. That old pike and I tramped across more earth than I care to remember. She got me through the border wars and back from the long march.
My father... He told me about the crusade into the northern wastes. He said hardly anyone came back.
Cass forked another slice of ham.
That's so. Only one company in 10 returned to Nemea. That was my last campaign. After watching so many friends die, I just wanted a little plot of land for myself and as much peace as any man deserves, even an old warhorse like me.
Tell me about Kaim.
I was under the impression you knew him better than I, young miss.
I? No, sir. Kaim and I are only companions by happenstance. We're just friends.
Well, what would you like to know?
Was he always the way he is now?
You mean the dark clothes and hard eyes?
Exactly.
No, not always. He was a pleasant lad when he was smaller, before his father was killed right in front of him, and his mother taken away to parts unknown.
His words sobered Josie faster than a shot of his bitter chaw, and reminded her that she wasn't the only one who had lost her parents.
It must have been hard for him.
Aye. It broke his little heart. And perhaps his mind, too. He didn't hardly speak at all after I took him out of the city and brought him down here. I thought I could raise him up, proper, take care of him. But there was always something different about Kaim after the attack.
Different how?
Well, it wasn't so much what he said or didn't as how he acted. He spent most of his time alone. He had no interest in playing children's games anymore. In fact, he wanted nothing to do with me at all unless it had to do with weapon play. I tried to put him off, but I could see early on that he wouldn't be long for this little cottage. So I figured I'd best make sure he knew how to take care of himself.
So you're the one who taught him how to fight?
I can't take much credit for that. Oh, I taught him how to handle a blade without sticking himself, but not much more than the basics. You see, soldiering is all I know. But Kaim wasn't satisfied with the simple drills I could teach him. He always pushed himself harder. Now, he learned more in those woods, stalking the forest creatures and whatnot than from me. I'll never forget the day he came home with a fine young buck slung over his shoulder. That thing weighed damn near as much as he did. He didn't have no bow or arrows neither, not even a spear.
How did he kill it then?
When I asked him that, he took out the hunting knife I'd given him and laid it on the table just as bold as brass. I nearly cuffed him for lying, but I could see it in his eyes.
He wasn't lying.
Nope. Near as I can tell, he ain't never lied to me.
Josie let that tumble around in her head as she thought about how to phrase her next question. She couldn't let go of the things she had seen in the cellar of her father's house. Kaim had done something, or become something, she wasn't sure which, but it wasn't natural.
Cass, did Kaim ever do anything strange?
All the time. You've seen it. He's a strange bird, but loyal to the bone. Was always like that. He'd wrangle like a snake to get out of a chore he didn't like, but if he gave you his word, he was true as steel.
No, I mean, did you ever see him do anything odd? Something you couldn't explain?
Cass met her gaze, his sea-blue eyes twinkling in the candlelight.
You mean his powers?
Yes.
I've seen it. It started not long after his father was killed. Kaim went from a bright, happy lad to moody as the sea of torments in winter. But that wasn't all. He started doing things. Things I couldn't explain. He always had light feet, but I swear he could pop out on you in an empty room. And trying to find him when he didn't want to be found, forget it. He was like a ghost.
Yes. What is it? Is he a... I don't know what you call it. A magician? A warlock?
Nay, lady. I've known that boy all his life. I watched him grow up from a tiny babe, and I can tell you on my life he didn't never go for that sort of mummery. No, it's all on account of his mother's blood. I'd heard the rumors. Every man who served under Kame's father had at one point or another. They said she'd come from the other side.
The other side?
The phrase pricked at something in her memory. Something she hadn't thought about in a very long time. A tale she'd been told as a child on stormy nights, when her nursemaid would bundle her up in blankets and tell her scary stories.
Do you mean the Feylands? Like elf mounds and unicorns?
It's a northern legend. Way up beyond the marshes and the wastes is said to be another world. A place of eternal twilight. The other side, we called it. Most folk pass it off as drivel, but you've seen Kame. His father was a young knight when he returned from beyond the marshes with a new bride and their child. The woman was a rare beauty, with skin like Mormorian crystal polished to a high luster, and the deepest, darkest eyes you've ever seen. It didn't take long for the stories to start around, but rumors are like mice. You try to stomp them out, but there's always a few scurrying under the floorboards.
What about you? Did you believe the stories?
I believed Kame's father was a decent man and an honest lord, which is as rare a thing as an honest wage these days. And he was a good friend. As for the rest, it wasn't none of my concern.
Does Kame know?
Hard to say. He was too young to understand such things when his parents were alive. Later on, I tried to spare him as much pain as I could, little as it was.
As she listened, Josie felt something stir in her chest. Emotions swirled beneath her calm surface, and she realized she had been holding Kame at a distance all this time. He had risked his life for her, and never deceived her or tried to take advantage. Take away the fact of his profession, and he was the finest man she'd ever known. She took a sip of wine.
Another shot?
She jumped in her seat.
Don't fret. That's just the trees blowing. Nothing to worry about.
Oh!
The door shivered in its frame. Cass leapt out of his chair. A splintered chunk of wood fell from the door.
No!
Josie clutched the table as a scream climbed up her throat. Through the hole left by the splinter of wood, Marcus grinned at her. A chill slid up Kame's backbone and lodged in the base of his skull. How could Raoul know? They must have been followed. He had to get back to the cabin. But first, he'd finish his business here. His knives came up, like steel extensions of his hands. Raoul stood calmly, hand resting on the sideboard. As Kame gathered himself for a rush, a tingle ran across his body. Raoul didn't move a muscle, but the room grew darker. For a moment, Kame thought his powers had emerged, unbidden again. But something was different. He didn't feel the pressure behind his breastbone. And yet, a prickling tingle danced along his skin like a march of 10,000 ants. The lampwick flickered. Kame half turned, keeping Raoul in view, as a cloaked figure stepped out of the shadows of the other room and stopped under the archway. Sweat broke out under Kame's arms. Shadows played across the man's ruined, colorless features. The eyes staring back at him, cold and black, catapulted Kame into a maelstrom of dark memories. Once again, he stood behind the fence on his father's estate. Bodies littered the bloodied courtyard. His father knelt before a man in black robes. White hands held his father's sword, as if examining its balance.
No!
The mysterious figure's cowl pulled back to reveal pale, ruined features like melted tallow. Features without remorse or pity. And those eyes, sunken within their hollow sockets. Just as he saw them now, Kame shifted to face his father's killer. The stranger didn't move. Wrapped in his voluminous cloak, he watched Kame in the manner of someone observing the movements of an insect. Kame eyeballed the span between them. 6 paces. A long lunge, but he could cover that distance in a heartbeat. Pasty hands emerged from the cloaked man's sleeves. Each held a short dagger, no longer than an eating knife, but their blades were as black as the stranger's cloak. Black as his father's sword. A greasy finger slid down Kane's spine, but he shook it off. He wouldn't be put off by odd weaponry or eerie stares. He was about to leap when a flash to his right triggered long-honed instincts. He stopped and ducked as Ralph's stiletto traced a path over his head. A spasm pulsed in Kame's chest, sudden and painful, as if his heart were trying to escape from his ribcage. He clamped down on the feeling and pushed it back down into the depths. He couldn't lose control, not now. Sword in hand, Ral advanced beside the cloaked man. Kame edged away. He could take Ral, but the stranger was a wild card. He didn't look like a fighter, but his movements were sure and quick. Kame didn't know if he could beat them both at once.
All right, Kame. I'll give you one last chance. Join us and reap the benefits. You can be my lieutenant, elevated above the slime of this city. You'll have power, money, women, everything you've ever wanted.
Kame didn't bother answering. Because of him, Josie was going to die. She might be dead already, but he could still perform one last act as penance for his failure. He eyed Ral's guard, sword held off center, ready to strike at any angle, but it left a lot of territory unprotected. Kame bent his knees. The pressure in his chest expanded, making it hard to breathe.
Your words are wasted on this one. Kill him and be done.
Yes, perhaps you're right, Levictus.
Kame allowed his rage to filter through his body, down through his arms and legs, and banish the tingles from his flesh. His vengeance had a name.
Levictus.
Kame fainted at Ral, but shifted in mid-stride. His sweet knife stabbed and aimed for the chest and gut of his father's killer. But they found only air as the cloaked man drifted away like smoke on the breeze, then flowed back with astounding speed. The black blades wove at Kame in a complicated pattern. It was a fighting style he had never encountered before, faster than anything Kame had ever seen. At the same time, something wriggled in his peripheral vision. Kame spared a glance and was almost spitted on the cloaked man's knives before he extricated himself with a fast parry and backpedal. Tiny blobs of darkness detached from the room's shadows. They ran down the walls like monstrous black tears. For a moment, Kame panicked, thinking he had lost control of his powers again. But he still felt the pressure, bursting to be free. The inky things resembled the shadows he had summoned before, but they were different in some ineffable way. Meaner, perhaps. He deflected a thrust from Ral's sword. When he looked down, the darknesses were all around him. But where'd they come from? The cloaked man launched a concerted series of attacks. Kame dodged and wove. He spun his blades in circles to disengage, and then stomped forward to press an attack. Anything to evade the cloaked man's sinister weapons. It was him. Somehow the stranger had called the shadows. And that meant... Kame had never met anyone like him. Someone who could also interact with shadows. If the cloaked man shared his abilities, what else might they have in common? A host of teeth like tiny needles of ice pierced his boots. He stomped on the floor to dislodge the tiny beasts and received a nick across his left forearm as a black knife slipped past his guard. He jumped back before the next flurry of attacks could strike home. Kame couldn't afford to examine the wound, but it burned like fire. He flexed his forearm as the sensation crept up into his shoulder. His side was beginning to throb from the exertion. Kame dipped under a swipe and lunged, and his side erupted in agony, but he blocked out the pain and extended to his fullest range. Levictus knocked the thrust aside, but Kame's left-hand knife followed behind with a high slash. The cloaked man jerked back, just in time to save his eyes, as the knife's tip cut a gash across his face from mouth to temple. Dark red blood coursed down his cheek. Kame maneuvered closer to the bed. He glanced across the coverlets. Ral had circled around the other side. He had one foot on the mattress, sword poised to strike. An oil lamp of blown glass hung over their heads. As his enemies closed in, Kame leapt up onto the bed. He batted aside a cut from Ral, swung his other knife in a high arc, and dove from the bed, landing behind his opponents in a soft roll, and spun around as he came to his feet. Burning oil rained from the ceiling. The bed's fine covers went up like tissue paper. In seconds, the fire spread to a drapery on the wall and up the ceiling. The cloaked man wheeled like an angry serpent as his shadowy minions flew across the room. Kane dove through the open window. He caught hold of a shutter as his legs cleared the sill. He hung there for a moment. Then the silvery blur of a throwing knife sped past his face. He let go, and the pavement rushed up to meet him.
Get down!
Josie slid under the table as Cass tore the spear down from its mounts. Cass skewered the first brother through the door. As the soldier fell, Cass whipped the spearhead around and stabbed another through the arm. For a moment, Josie saw a glimmer of hope. Maybe the old man could fend them off. But as Cass yanked his weapon free for another strike, the press of bodies shoved him back. His spear seemed a pitiful weapon against so many swords. Something crashed through the window. A heavily built soldier with thick arms and a scraggly yellow beard crawled over the sill. Josie reached up onto the table, grabbed the half-empty bottle, and hurled it at the invader. It broke in his arm, drenching his uniform in wine. Heartened, Josie reached for more ammunition. He leapt at her. She kicked and fought as he reeled her in like a fish on a line. Cass staggered in the middle of the room. Blood streamed down his clothes from a host of wounds. He plied the spear with failing strength until a blade smote him across the brow. He stumbled to the floor. Josie squirmed and tried to bite her captor and was rewarded with a slap across the face.
Now, none of that, Josephine.
Bandages peeked from underneath Marcus's striking new uniform. A white jacket and pants with golden insignia along the sleeves and stiff collar. It was the uniform of the Grand Master of the Sacred Brotherhood.
Why are you wearing...
Then Josie caught sight of Marcus's face. The flesh of his sunken cheeks was rippled and crusted black. Drool leaked from the wet sores where his lips had been. They pulled back in a terrible grimace as he stood over Cass. The big man's eyes were open, but glassy and unfocused. Blood seeped between the fingers clutching his belly.
Another valiant defender. He seemed to collect them like pets.
Leave him alone! Take me, but let him be!
Marcus held up a gloved finger as the brothers surrounded Cass.
Don't waste your breath. There's no rescue coming for you this time.
While their brethren stomped the old man with their hobnailed boots, two soldiers drew long daggers and approached Josie. Marcus straightened his cuffs.
Do you like my new look?
How much gold did it take to convince you to betray your oath?
Times are changing, Princess. You would be wise to change with them.
You go to hell.
The knives sliced off her clothing.
I was too kind before on the waterfront. This time, I'm going to take my time and enjoy it.
Josie was lifted onto the table, the rough wood abrading her naked skin. She kicked and connected. Blood dripped from her lips, but she smiled through the pain. Let them do their worst. She wouldn't go quietly. But a cold worm twisted in Josie's belly as Marcus appeared over her.
Don't worry, girl. I was told to return you alive and unharmed. We're not going to hurt you.
He unbuckled his trousers.
Just a little tickle.
Blood and night soil!
A troop of table dealers from the gaming room downstairs had managed to extinguish the flames burning Rao's suite, but it had reduced his rooms to a burnt shambles. Everything reeked of fire and ashes.
Damn Kame. He has the Horned One's own luck.
The sorcerer was gone as well. Good riddance to both as far as he was concerned. They could kill each other for all he cared. Rao considered Vasily's papers tucked inside his jacket. He hadn't been able to make out everything on those yellowed pages, but what he understood spelled out dire implications not only for the church, but for the entire country. The archpriest had been involved in dirty dealings, even by his standards. Trucking with sorcery, deviltry, regicide. Vasily hadn't just wanted to rule Nemea, he had wanted to spread the church's influence throughout the entire world. What boldness! In the end, the Archpriest's sin had not been a lack of ambition, but trust in the wrong persons. Ral wouldn't make that mistake. He didn't trust anyone, especially his new ally. But knowing what to expect from the sorcerer, secrets, lies, and eventual betrayal, was better than trust. It was a certainty upon which to base his decisions. To rule an empire. It could be done, if he was bold enough. Ral stopped beside the sideboard table. The wooden boxes had survived the fire with a few singes, a minor miracle for which he was almost prepared to bend knee and offer a prayer of thanks. He had seen for himself the kind of power a symbol could hold over common folk, give them a hero, especially when raised from their own ranks, and they would follow him to the gates of hell. Everything was almost in place. When Marcus returned with the prize, they could proceed to the final phase of the plan.
The last throw of the dice.
A centurion of the Sacred Brotherhood appeared at the door. A grizzled veteran with more gray in his hair than blonde and deep lines crisscrossing his face, he saluted with a fist pressed to his heart.
The surrounding streets are clear, sir, but I sent a squad after the culprit.
Ral turned over his left hand. The tower-shaped blot gleamed on his palm like a patch of wet ink. He had tried washing it with lye, brine, vinegar, and bourbon, but so far the stain proved indelible. More to boot, in the fight with Caim, he could have sworn it had started to tingle, barely noticeable in the heat of the melee, but a strange sensation nonetheless.
Recall them. Are we prepared for Master Ariston's return?
Yes, sir. I have brothers posted at the market gate to receive him and the package.
Good. Have them brought to Celestial Hill as soon as they arrive. We're going to the palace.
As you command.
Ral glanced down at his hand again. The mark rippled with the supple contractions of his tendons. A noble mark. Perhaps he would use it in his new family crest, a black tower on a field of white. It had a touch of elegance to it. He looked around the room for the last time. Ral didn't intend to return here ever again. In fact, he would try to forget his time spent here. Rising stars had no need for memories of the earth below. At the centurion's command, 13 sacred brothers entered the suite, and each left carrying a wooden box. Levictus stepped from the shadow of an oak tree and onto a carpet of soft loam. Night seeped between the boles of the ancient grove. The sweet promise of its power beckoned to him like a lover's perfume. His cheek burned through lines of blood congealed along his jaw. He had attempted to pursue the one who injured him through the city, but finally lost the man somewhere in the labyrinthine alleyways.
Shachar!
He seized one of the shadows crawling under his robe and tore it open. He stuffed its gelatinous body into his wound. The bleeding stopped, and the flesh began to mend. This man Caim was a devious foe, but only a man after all. He would be dealt with before long. Levictus strode across the uneven ground. Moldy stones and fallen pillars of an old cecellum studded the earth under the canopy of interwoven branches. Built as a temple in Nemea's pagan past, the site also marked a fault point, a weakness in the fabric between realms. It was here, less than a league from the city walls, he had discovered his budding powers as a young man. Here he taught himself how to access those abilities with sacrifices of small forest creatures, and eventually larger victims. Later, Vasili, ever the supportive mentor when he wanted something, had supplied him with proscribed texts to further his education in the black arts. Now the archpriest was dead, and Levictus, a man remade in the torture cells of the Holy Inquest, manipulated the strings of an empire. He went to the stone altar at the temple's center, the very spot where he had made his fateful pact so many years ago. The memory of that night was seared into his brain. He had sought to avenge his family, but what he summoned in his ignorance went beyond anything he had ever imagined. He had seen things that night he couldn't forget, no matter how he tried. By the following dawn, he'd been a changed man. He ran his hands across the weathered stone and drank in the power permeating the temple, let it fill him to completeness. He hadn't been back to this place in years, but now he needed to make contact again. It was time to unleash the full measure of his powers upon those who had tormented him.
Shibel! Oort necht! Dnitran echo! Esartin!
Shadows were consumed in the sorcery. The wound ceased to bother him. In its place arose a wave of ecstasy far beyond any earthly pleasure. It raced through his body like lightning as his paean to the forces beyond soared into the sky. Above the altar, a window of nothingness opened. As a frigid wind erupted from the rift, he braced himself and stood firm, resolute in the powers at his command, even as a figure appeared in the aperture.
Levictus, long has it been since your last communication. Is this the manner in which you pay homage to the Lords of Unrelenting Dark?
I have summoned your time.
A jet of black flames lashed out from the portal. Levictus dropped to the ground, wrapped in their searing embrace. When the flames departed, he was curled into a tight ball. The figure leaned closer to the rift. A dark gown clung to voluptuous curves. Cascades of midnight hair framed eyes that glowed like the pits of hell.
Such as you do not summon us. You are a servant. A slave of the shadow to be used in whatever manner we require.
Levictus pulled himself onto his knees. The pain was subsiding. He held his hands up to the moonlight, expecting to see a mass of charred flesh. Instead, there was only smooth, healthy skin. He genuflected before the altar.
Forgive me, mistress.
Tell us why you have reached across the void this night.
I ask for another infusion.
You dare! You, to whom the Lords of Shadow have granted more power than any mortal in 1,000 years, to whom the secrets of the dark were laid bare, you dare to demand more!
I do not demand, I merely beg for the strength to serve your will. Uther, the jewel of the Empire, lies under the sun like a great bloated whore, spreading her cancer to every land. I would tear down her scabrous walls and scatter her people to the four winds. I would bring the shadow to this place and extinguish the light of Nemea forever.
The emissary's head tilted so that her hair fell across her face, hiding her dusky features.
What you desire is possible, but there is a danger.
Levictus lowered his forehead to the cool earth.
I accept the risks.
And there is another price to be paid as well.
Levictus had feared as much when he hatched his plan. 16 years ago, he had been given a task to cement his original pact with the other side. He didn't mind at the time. It gave him a chance to experiment with his newfound powers. Now, after freeing himself from Vasily's yoke, the idea of continued service enraged him. But he would have his final revenge on Othar, and the man who had wounded him. Though his heart resisted, he bowed his head in assent. He listened to the emissary's message, whispered across the void, and all the while his chest grew heavy with dread as the shadow's plans were divulged to him. And yet, what choice did he have? He had bound his fate to this path long ago. It was too late to break free. When she finished, Levictus nodded once more.
I will do as you bid. When do I receive my boon?
It comes.
The figure faded from view as the window shriveled up like a dead leaf. The grove darkened, and black clouds gathered above to block out the moonlight. The ground quivered under his feet. Levictus clenched his fists as the tides of magic coalesced around him, but he could not have prepared himself for the tsunami that crashed down upon his head. He shivered, helpless in the throes of power. It scoured the marrow from his bones. It pounded through his veins and swelled in his chest until he thought his heart would explode. Overhead, storm clouds crackled and spat. Then, like the eye of a hurricane, the surge evaporated. Levictus picked himself up from the patch of dry ground where the convulsions had thrown him. He was himself again, and yet he was changed. Things looked different. The darkness churned around him like a living, breathing thing. Glowing eyes watched him from the shadows. The shadows. They too had changed. Looking upon them, he understood what had been given to him, and he accepted. With a smile, Levictus wrapped his cloak around him. As the deep, cool blackness fell around him, his body lightened, and he flew on the night winds. Back to Othar to sow the seeds of destruction.